For March the 28th, 2025, we talk about Do No Harm, The Root Trees Are Dead, Cruelty Squad, and much more. Welcome to Level 537. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Thanks for understanding the skip week last week. Stuff came up.
New York.
Yeah.
It happens.
But yep. We fought off the ninjas trying to assassinate us, and we're back.
Yep. You know,
I never thought if I didn't pay the ones that I sent after Moxie that they might get mad and come back after me. I'm really sorry. I kind of put us all in danger there.
That's what they call karma.
It's kind of like one of the best ways to assure you're going to shoot somebody you love is to have a gun in the house. Like mm-hmm. once you start bringing killers for hire into the situation, that's a clock ticking.
All you have is a hammer.
Oh gosh. Who's got stuff?
I've got we babysat our nephews over the weekend while their parents were in Costa Rica.
Okay.
For a wedding slash a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had some extra kids running around the house all weekend, which was very fun. Especially because I got to see my youngest not be the youngest for a weekend.
Okay.
Which it went straight to his head, having someone to boss around.
Napoleon complex.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the two youngest ones, played very well together on the scale of things. But he is definitely, just in the course of whatever the 2 or 3 days it was, picked up some habits of like, oh, okay. I'm the big man now. Everyone has to listen to me. I'm going to start issuing orders, and is carrying that forward, even though he is back to being the littlest.
Oh,
yeah. It was a fun weekend.
That's good. Yeah. Moxie, how about you?
Yeah. So, I officially moved to the DC area.
Okay.
We haven't recorded since then. So,
It's
been a lot of fun. I think the strangest thing is just driving around and seeing random landmarks. So like I checked out a new martial arts school over the weekend, and on my way home, the GPS just took me just going home on the street that goes in front of the Capitol building.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Or like, more urban kind of downtown-esque areas if you don't want to go into DC itself.
Okay.
Which is kind of a pain, is Arlington. And so drive around there just all the time. You'll look over and there'll, be like cemetery next to you.
Oh, yeah, because it's all cemetery.
Right, exactly. So it's really interesting, just kind of that experience, and it's weird just like, I'm looking at where I'm actually going to end up living permanently. And like one of the places I'm considering is Pentagon City.
Okay.
So named because it's right next to the Pentagon.
Huh. Pentagon City sounds like what they would name it in a video game if they were doing like a DC-esque era, an area that's not actually DC.
Oh, yeah. No, totally. Totally does. Right now the city's like whole thing is this is the Cherry Blossom Festival, which I didn't realize is like a freaking month long.
Mm. Okay. But, yeah.
Everything is cherry blossoms, people wearing pink, and went to a Japanese market restaurant with coworkers today, and they had, you know, cherry blossom mochi special they made and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of cool. I really want to do, apparently there's a Bunraku puppeteer in town, like doing performances.
Okay.
And those are like the crazy Japanese marionettes where they literally like, they can blink and stuff like that. They're like, if you took marionette times a million.
Yeah.
Is this where people wearing black are kind of working it in the background? Am I thinking of the right thing, or is that something else?
I'm not sure. I think it might be. But okay. It's a thing where it's literally like takes an entire lifetime to learn to operate these puppets because, you know, they're, you know, like fully articulated and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, are, I don't know exactly, but maybe like half scale to a human being, stuff mm-hmm. like that.
Also, I'd probably have to learn how to make them too, because.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going down to the corner store and getting a Bunraku marionette.
Right, exactly. So I'm hoping to get a chance to see that. But yeah, there's all sorts of stuff going on. I do love the idea that, as you might imagine, you know, in Washington, D.C., you know, just by virtue of it being Washington, D.C., there's, you know, tons of super Republican people, super MAGA people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love the idea that, you know, at least some of these like MAGA bros are being forced to wear pink right now.
Yeah.
And just despise it. And so
wallow
that
in your insecurity.
That's cool. I'm glad you're getting settled in.
Yeah. Yeah. Slowly but surely gain the hang of it.
Sweet. Ben, how about you?
Yeah. I guess what Moxie was saying with the cherry blossoms, I didn't realize, but University of Washington's campus has cherry blossom trees. So I wonder if that's a connection, the Washington connection.
Nice.
But yeah, this past week, just like life stuff, not a lot happened. But that's okay, because 2 weeks ago was the Steam sale, so a lot of stuff happened in that. So mm-hmm. I think it balances out, and I have plenty to talk about at least. So
that's good. Yeah.
If I went last, that would be a good segue. But.
Yes. No, I really don't have anything. It's just been a bunch of work. Been a bunch of work and personal stuff. So
yeah. Crank.
Yeah. So, I mean, that sounds like some banter. Let's go and get started. Let's pretend we can get that smooth segue there. And to do that, we need to have the regular kind of show. What with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Ben, I will throw it to you.
All right, you took me at my word, I guess.
Yes.
I got nothing this week. No.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. No.
Liar!
No, I picked up a decent amount of games on a Steam sale. I think I had a coworker inspire me where they said that their pattern was basically they have a list of games that they're looking for. Whenever Steam sale comes out, they'll like get most of them and mm-hmm. then will like slowly churn through them like the rest of the year and try and do it that way. So I wanted to take a shot at that. I tried to be very judicious of and like look through walkthroughs of the games to like definitely pick the ones that I would actually play and would complete and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, these were the ones that I had this past week. The first one is a game by Annapurna Games, which they've done a good number of games at this point. I think Neon White and like Donut Country are some notable ones.
Yeah, huge publisher.
Yeah, the one that I played is a game called Storyteller that came out last year. It's a pretty well-polished game, but the premise of it is a puzzle game where you have a storybook. It looks like a kind of like fantasy book, like kids, like fairy tale type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you have control over characters, and you have controls over whatever the setting or background of a scene is. And by mixing and matching these, you're trying to make a desired outcome happen. And the prompt of each level will kind of tell you what they want to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So an example is it might be, the characters might be like the witch, Cinderella, and the prince. and it wants you to have the Cinderella turned into a frog and back again. And so the different settings you have are like the cauldron, a forest, the mirror, and like a boat or something like that. And so the idea is once you play around with these scenes, you kind of understand what the effect that they have are. Mm-hmm. So for example, the mirror setting, if you put the witch in the mirror setting, she gets angry at Cinderella because she's told that she's not the fairest person of them all.
Right.
And so you see that just by...
That's Snow White.
Oh, yeah. All right, sorry.
That could have happened to Cinderella, too.
No, you're totally right. They have, like, more playful names where it's like, it might be Whitey, not going to elaborate on that one, but stuff like that.
Like Pentagon City, you know.
Yeah.
But it's conveyed to you by just showing like an angry sort of like an angry eyebrow and like a little like scribbly like black line or something like that. So uh-huh. like almost like in comic book form.
Oh,
and so
gosh.
You kind of have to put the pieces together to be like, okay, well, if she's angry at Snow White and then she later meets Snow White in the forest, she'll change her to a frog. Okay, so that's step one of the puzzle. And so you have like maybe six different pains that you can play around with to try and chain up all the events to get the desired outcome.
And there's causality between them. So if you change around yes. something in the beginning, it changes the logic tree on this, Ben, is giving me like, this must be like what like expert chess players feel like trying to hold the whole, like just like how many different permutations there has to be behind that. Like, how do you fucking account for it? Good Lord.
Yeah. I doubt they like chess it out and are more just like recompute the six scenes and like what effect that has on the state or whatever and do it that way maybe. But part of the fun too is like trying to figure out, you know, like how to put these things together. And the space does seem really massive at first, but then once you start kind of noticing patterns, then you can kind of get a handle on it.
Yeah.
So for example, there's another one where it's like they'll have like Edgar Allan Poe as a character or like the Wolfman as a character and like what's the Lenore as I think a character?
The Raven.
And so yeah, and so there might be one where it's like you need to marry people first and then have somebody poison another person. And you even have to get down to the level of like, well, if these two people marry, this person is jealous of this person. But if these two people marry instead, they're not jealous. So you can mm-hmm. solve a puzzle like this way. So anyway, and it sounds like a very complicated thing I'm describing, but this game kind of like sails by where it's, mm-hmm. you could beat it in probably like 3 or 4 hours and it's like pretty delightful and pretty, satisfying to like mm-hmm. churn through.
Yeah. So this is one that's actually, a favorite of mine for watching Let's Plays.
Oh, okay.
Have you gotten to, or it sounds like maybe you've beat it, any of the ones where you can kind of subvert it?
Yeah, I didn't want to give necessarily the mechanic of that away, but yeah, there's something where if you beat the game proper, they give you another tool to go back and do different solutions to previous puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
In true indie game fashion. It seems like Locke did that, and was it Bob Izzou did that?
Mm-hmm.
So something in that vein.
I've also seen, and maybe I'm talking about something else, I've seen like a couple of puzzles that you can solve where it's like
people
have to get married, but the rules don't say can't marry the Wolfman.
Yeah, okay, I see what you're saying. Yes, sometimes there's like bonus objectives where it'll be like so-and-so kills this gnome, and it's like, and then there's like an added one who's like, but he was just trying to protect her or something mm-hmm. like that. And so like it recontextualizes where the first solution might not be the way you want to do it, but you have to kind of find a more complicated solution that still satisfies the first prompt, but in a much more roundabout way. So they have like those kind of scattered throughout the game. And those are, those can be satisfying as well.
This feels like an elaboration on a game. It was like a mobile game. There's a PC version of it now, but does anybody here remember Framed?
I remember seeing that.
Yeah, it's like you have to it'll show you like a comic book page of like something going wrong, and it's like a noir spy kind of aesthetic to it, like a Catch Me If You Can kind of thing almost. like the aesthetic of that intro, but it's like, okay, yeah, here's, you know, like here's a little story segment. It told in these comic book frames and here it is going wrong. But if you rearrange the order of them, the animation plays out differently and you have to like change things around so that it, so that they succeed. And then you go on to like the next little bit of the thing. Like
this, yeah, the inverse Coen brothers.
Kind of. Yeah. Yeah,
aesthetically they look similar. I think mechanically they're a bit different. Where just,
this seems more complex than Framed to me.
I think Framed relies a lot more on the like physicality of the things, where it's like you can twist the scenes and like, yeah, by putting them consecutively, the character can run through them and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. There's not really as much of that here. It's more of just the combinations of the characters in the foreground and what setting they're in. Yeah. I should mention like, each of the settings, like I said, like Cauldron or Woods or something like that, they'll have arrows that'll show you like how many characters you can place in that scene. Mm-hmm. And so it's anywhere from like 1 to 3, typically. I don't think it gets too much crazier beyond that.
Yeah.
But yeah. But yeah, that's a good call out though, because aesthetically they are very similar.
Yeah.
So the other one this kind of, I guess, conceptually in some ways reminds me of is, has anyone messed around with, I think it's Wilder Myth?
That's a roguelike, right? Or is that
yeah.
No, wait, that's a tactical game, right?
It's a tactical game, but the thing that reminds me of is it does a certain degree of kind of letting you play God in that, for example, like if your character dies, you get to decide like, oh, the wound, you know, only looked serious, in which case, like, you can revive them, or you can choose, like, no, they're dead permanently, but, you know, in so doing, they inspired your team, and so they win the encounter, like, stuff like, yeah, that. Like, it's got kind of the whole, you can do the storytelling.
And it almost does, like a proc gen campaign kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Nice. Hmm.
No, yeah, I had seen... I didn't know that's what this game was. I thought it was like just based on the splash screen and some things, it kind of looked like it was a walking sim. This is more interesting to me, so I'm happy you talked about it.
Yeah, that is really cool.
It does seem like a good streaming game too, if people are into that. But yeah, it's an enjoyable experience. So it is the production's very good on it. I think in Steam I think it's like $15 when it's not on sale.
That's not bad.
I would probably peg it at a $5 to $10 game, but follow your own bliss on that one, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah. That's Sweet. All I got to say about Storyteller.
Cool.
Alright. The next one I have is a game called The Root Trees Are Dead.
Oh shit, I really want to play this.
Okay. Steam really wants me to play this.
Okay. This one's more recent, where this just came out 2 months ago. This one was recommended from a friend, shout out John, where it's a game that takes place in the 90s, made in Godot Engine, by the way, takes place in the 90s. And the premise is a famous family died in an airplane crash, and you are hired as like a internet detective in the late 90s to figure out the relationship of all of this famous family with one another. And you're being hired by an anonymous person to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine how hard it is to be an internet detective in the 90s?
In the late 90s? Mm-hmm. I know.
Go insane so many, from the dial-up sounds alone.
I think it has that at the beginning. Literally does the dial-up thing. Yeah, so the mechanically how this bears out is you have a detective-esque corkboard where it's like all this family tree connected out. And there's room for photos to go there. There's room for names to go there. And there's room for occupations to go there on different people. And so it has the family tree connected already. So you see where, you know, like the top, you know, grandparents and great grandparents are. And you see like each of the generations.
Yeah.
But you are just given like kind of like drip fed, like a few names at a time. So it starts with the people who died in a plane crash. It's like 5 different people. And then you can use this 90s computer that has a search engine, I think called Spider Search.
Love it.
and it has a periodicals that you can search through, but you need to know the names of the periodical to search in order to do that. So those are kind of spoon-fed to you or slowly given to you over the course of the game. And then there's a library search engine where if you know the exact author and the exact name of a book, you can look up that for more details. But the results are not given to you as like what you would think of if you like Googled something. The results are summarized by your character and it's just written down. So it'll say something like, well, you find a lot of articles about this, but there's not really a lot of information about this. Oh, there's one article about this person there or something like that.
Yeah.
So it'll be a summary of each of them. So you don't have to really like, that's not a mechanic of the game, is like kind of like parsing through tech, you know, like, you know, fake written articles to try and parse out things that way. Like that's kind of given to you. But even within that summary, there will be names that you might not have heard of. There will be maybe like events or TV shows or books you haven't heard of. And you can either search for those on the Spider Search, or you can like, if appropriate, you can search for one of the other ways of searching things. And so what you're trying to do is you're trying to build up this family tree, and basically the game will tell you every time you have three people exactly correct. And by that, it's you have a picture of them, you have their name, and you have their occupation completely correct. And then when you lock,
but if you have four, it won't tell you?
Well, it's every three. So like when you get three, it'll tell you. And then when you get the fourth one, it won't tell you anything because it's going to wait until you have six right before it'll tell you again.
Okay, I see.
But the other thing too is any superfluous like information you have, or like any like kind of like not everybody has like those three fields. Some of them will just have like a name next to them, or some of them will maybe just have a secondary picture attached to them or something like that. Every time you lock in three, it'll also lock in anything else that's correct. So you're slowly kind of like narrowing down this information.
It does like an Oprah Din with it.
Yeah. And yeah, so at the beginning, it'll, in your search fields, it'll have everything that you've seen up until this point. So it'll be, you know, like that quickly blows up to, you know, like, you know, 50 to 100 different names and whatever. But then that slowly starts funneling down once you get more and more right. It has a narrative around it, kind of like an immersive narrative based on like, as you're searching things, you get more information about the context of this family and how what their relationships are.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. And I will say the two more things I'll say about the game is it has a very good hint system where if you get stuck, it will prompt you and be like, you should know what this is by now without saying anything else. And then if you click hint again, it'll say, well, maybe if you like, they mentioned this in this article, maybe you could look into that or something. And then it'll give you more and more explicit clues for something that's missing until you mark it correctly. And then after you mark it correctly, it'll go on to the next thing that you have incorrect. So if you're ever stuck, it is very easy to make progress by engaging with the hint system.
Yeah.
And it's done in a way too where it doesn't really shame you about it either. So I think that's a really nice feature of the game. Cause I leaned on it in the second half a bit, and probably I don't know to what degree, but I definitely enjoyed that, because like when I got to the point where it's like, all right, I think I'm, you know, done thinking about all I want to think about, like just give me the next like three or four and then maybe I'll re-engage with the game later. So I appreciated that. The one thing I'll say about the narrative is there is like a surprise at the end that I won't say anything about, but I'll just say it was fine. The narrative wasn't necessarily as impactful as I was hoping it might be. So I don't know. It was fine. But I guess that was something where it was just like, you know, I was really interested to see where like the mystery of like the family was going. And there were a lot of good things to like set up where they were going with it. I guess I was just hoping for a little bit more,
Yeah.
Since the game starts with an explosion, I was hoping it would end with something like that too, maybe. But then maybe they're telling a different story. So that could just be completely like personal taste. But overall, this is kind of like Storyteller, where it's like, it's going to be a 4 or 5 hour experience. It's pretty well polished. I haven't looked up. I mean, the developer says like a single person's name, so I assume it's like solo dev sort of thing.
Yeah. So this is a an updated re-release of like, I think it was like a Twine game or something like that. Like this had been around on the web for a while. And I think that this was a way for them to kind of like repackage it outside of like being a browser game.
Nice. Oh, okay. That's kind of cool. But yeah, overall I enjoyed it. I thought it was, you know, creatively enough done and like well enough executed that it seems like it's definitely its own thing and it's like a good iteration of what it's trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I had similarly positive feelings about it. So
yeah. I have this like on my like, I don't know, break glass in case of emergency kind of thing, because you could never play Return of the Obra Dinn like for a second time. Like it's kind of you play it once, and even if you forget the particulars, you kind of know the shape of it. And you're not going to have those kind of like eureka moment kind of things like of people who talk about like detective games like that. Like this is the one that they say like closest mimics that. And so,
yeah,
I want to get that feeling back again.
I could see that sort of comparison. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gameplay wise.
If you guys, sorry.
No.
If you guys are ever looking for a detective game, I highly recommend Contradiction.
Oh, that's real short, though. That's more of a Phoenix Wright alike, too. Contradiction is great, though.
I'll have to look this up later.
Yeah, I love the name Phoenix Wright alike. I don't know, it just flows off the tongue.
This one, I think, is $20 on Steam, but I would probably put it in a similar ballpark where it's like, maybe $5 to $12.50 to me or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But again, follow your own advice. I'm just trying to give a metric for so people can evaluate it. But yeah, I got one more.
Okay.
All right. The last one I got is a game called Lone Star. Not like the restaurant, right? Wasn't that a restaurant? I don't know.
This is not Wild Star, that old MMO.
No. Oh,
that's a great game.
It's also not Homestar.
None of these stars, because these are different many stars, and this is just a singular lone star.
I know this one. Yeah, this looks cool.
This is giving this it is FTL.
Are you sure it's not One Star, the life-saving system installed in your new car today?
OnStar.
Well, we'll find out based on my review if it's a one star or not. But it's this is kind of like a... I would say it's maybe closer to like Slay the Spire than it is FTL, but it visually looks like FTL. It is so it's a roguelike game. The idea is you're on a spaceship. The game is broken up into two different stages where it is you fight another ship during one stage, and then you're quote unquote on vacation during the next stage where you have a certain number. Instead of it being like in Slay the Spire, it's like, the way they do it is it's like you have a map where it's like you do a fight and then the next node might be something else where it's like a random chance game or like a rest site or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those non-fight things are kind of condensed into this one section where it's like a visual like space you're exploring, and it's like you can go refuel if you want, or you can go to this planet if you want and there's a mystery event that happens, or you can go to a space shop if you want. So that half of the game is that, just doing these random things. But the interesting thing about it is in your run, there's basically three stages, like in Slay the Spire. The amount of points you have to spend in the stage progressively goes up from like 2 to 7, I think. Mm-hmm. And so how good the events are also scale with that, but you can still choose a combination of them. So an event might be worth like 2 to 4 to 5 points. And so you kind of pick a combination of what you want to do. But kind of bearing the lead, because the main meat and potatoes of the game is the fight section of the game, where you are a ship fighting another ship, similar to FTL, but instead of it being like an RTS game, it is more of like a tactical, discrete choice game with the random element of you have random die generated, and that's kind of what you use to do your actions.
So, is it like a dice placement thing like Citizen Sleeper?
A little bit. It's kind of its own thing though, because what your ship is a 3x3 grid where each node is some sort of contraption. It's either a weapon or a support type, contraption. Those are the two categories for it. Weapons will fire against the enemy down whatever horizontal lane it's on.
Mm-hmm.
And then support ones will just do some random function. It might change the color of your die. It might upgrade the number of your die. It might generate a new die. It might affect the how much damage like a weapon's doing nearby it. It's kind of like it can do anything, or you know, like there's a wide array of uses it can do. But the idea is every contraption will take a certain number of die, and it will take a certain color of die. So there's three different colors of die: orange being the best, then blue being the middle, and then white being the weakest. And the reason why I'm ranking them is like the exclusivity, where orange can go anywhere. Blue can go in any blue or white slot, and then white can only go in white slots.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what the color order is. And then the numbers are 1 to 6, or sorry, they're you start off generating 1 to 6, but they can go as high as 9. So the numbers are 1 to 9.
Mm-hmm.
But to give you an example of like what they do, one of the initial weapons you'll get is if you put 2 die of the same number in here, will generate 2 additional damage to when you fire this weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And so on top of all these contraptions or whatever, you kind of have a round like Slay the Spire where you see how much damage the opponent's doing. And it's divided into typically, I think it's always, sometimes it's 2, but it's typically 3 lanes since your ship is 3 high. And so you'll see 3 numbers in red with the damage that they're generating. And then as you add dice to your ship, you'll see how much damage you're generating. And
it's
kind of like whoever has the higher number wins.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a difference of 1, they'll take 1 damage. If you tie, no one takes any damage.
Okay.
That sort of thing. So it's like the same thing with Slay the Spire, how like defense and attack, you do the difference of the two, and that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But on top of that, there's like a shield counter that each enemy has where anytime you break or win a lane, like and get some amount of damage on them, that counter will decrease by 1. And that's like their armor. And so once that goes to 0, the ship is stalled for a turn where you basically get a free shot where you can just shoot at it with impunity. And they're doing nothing that turn.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of like something you're trying to progress towards, is beat that, so that you can get like some real damage on them, whether it's like uncontested, they're not firing back on you, and they have hit points. So once their hit points go to 0, then you've won. I'm trying to think if there's another win condition, but I think that's the only one is hit points.
Okay.
I might remember that later. So you have this weird like lane sort of battling, and to make it more interesting, you have a resource of gasoline, where if you spend it, you can spend it by moving the ship up or down 1 space so that the lanes that you're attacking and the numbers that you're going against compared to them will change based on how you move. So it's always going to be 3 lanes because your ship is only 3 high, but the ship you're fighting might be like 5 long or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you might be changing out numbers if you move up or down 1.
Yeah.
But there's some interesting tactical things to this where it's like, say if they're firing with a really high number in the top lane and then some kind of like non-interesting ones in the other two, if you shift down 1, then you can like easily win that fight as opposed to like having a harder one by trying to fight the top lane. So there's like some cool tactical things to go to all this. I don't know if I'm getting too lost in the weeds of this, but the general meta of the game is you get it's something adjacent to like artifacts, but you get things just like in Slay the Spire that will modify just like small things, like start off with a blue 1 every round or something like that. Or anytime you put in a 1, it counts as a 3 into a machine and stuff like that. So you get modifiers like that as you're going through your run. And the goal is like the same thing as in Slay the Spire, where you're just trying to make a chaos engine that just mm-hmm. lays waste to anything in front of it. And so it's kind of hard to evaluate this game so far, even though I've played like maybe 5 or 6 runs of it all the way through to win. Like trying to figure out what the meta's like and how repeatable it is and how much control you have of it versus how much of like lol you randomly win sort of thing.
Right.
And so there, I haven't really come to a conclusion on it yet. I'm still trying to like figure out that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's And it's tough because, like Slaying Spire, it's kind of like a moving platform where things are unlocked as you play it, and you have like a level system.
Oh, so like, oh, you're figuring this out, but like the thing that defines what the meta ought to be is probably like a few unlocks down, so you can't like get settled in.
Yeah, yeah, like just like in Slay the Spire, where it's like all, you know, the good poison cards get unlocked like later, and so like at the start of the game, you don't really have access to that meta. But then on top of that, there's other unlockables that are cool too, where it's like when you start a run, you have your choice of one of three like pilots, and they each have different effects, and so you unlock more pilot types as you go on. And it's, instead of it being like more focused, where it's like they just have three or four the entire game, it seems like they have like dozens. And so and yeah, and so you pick that. There's two different types of ships they have. There's one that I gravitate to more towards, where it's like one is you have a shield and then hit points, and so the shield regenerates every battle, whereas the hit points don't. Whereas the other ship is you can get three swaps of your weapons, where you can move them around your ship, but you can only do that three times per battle.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit harder to kind of wrap your mind around, but it's a cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, there's like, it seems like there's a lot of things in it. So, I still need to play more to kind of see the breadth of this game. And I should mention, this game is still in early access. It's yeah. The release for it is sometime April, though, so it is like towards the end of its early access.
Yeah,
and it feels like pretty much like a full-fledged game at this point. So I'll be curious to see what gets added to it, if anything, during the release.
It sounds like a lot, if I'm being honest.
Sure. Yeah. I will say that it plays similar to like a Slay the Spire, where it's like if you do a run that takes like maybe an hour or two, and so I mean it's kind of architected in a similar way like that, and it is like discreet like Slay the Spire too, where it's not like something like Hearthstone or Marvel Snap or whatever. It's like press this and something random happens. It's more like the randomness is in the die and the numbers that you get, but then what you do with it is very like discreet, and you can wrap your mind around, but there's big option space there, so it's kind of fun to think through.
Mm-hmm.
but yeah, so far I'm definitely think it's cool. I think there's potential there. I guess I won't give a final verdict about it until later, so I still need to play it some more, I think. But I'm very happy with it so far. So, and if you like those types of games, I think it's definitely a good candidate for being another one of those good type of games. So
nice. Yeah. Lone Star. Yeah, I don't know that I have any questions about it. I just, it seems like one of those things that would be, like if I sat down and played it, it might make more sense to me.
Sure. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all I got for this week.
Okay. I have one.
What do you got?
And it's relatively new. It came out earlier this month. Streamed a game called Do No Harm.
Oh. Yes. I saw some of this.
Yeah.
I don't believe for a second that you do no harm.
No, you can do a lot of harm advertently or inadvertently. So this is, horror game, horror themed game kind of thing. You're playing as a doctor who goes and opens the only clinic on this, small island, a fisherman, kind of people. And, you need to take patients and administer the right medicine to them based on their symptoms. The symptoms, could be things, as innocuous as fatigue, body ache, things like that. Or it could be, I'm growing gills. I hear whispers to me from the waves. It's like a Lovecraftian kind of thing. And, like the Steam description is like a Lovecraftian doctor simulator.
Looking at this, it gives me immediate Papers, Please vibes.
So yeah, that is a good,
very much.
That is a good call. It is extremely Papers, Please. Instead of, checking documents and making sure that everything is, squared away and, things match up and it's not forged or anything like that. This is, they come in, they tell you that they have a symptom, or they say, I don't know what's wrong. Let's just figure it out. There are four kinds of medicines based on the humors. that you can give to them, and you're trying to determine what the right dose and what the, you know, what the right medicine is. This gets more complicated, and eventually there's like a little decoder wheel kind of thing, you know, because you're also working around their allergies, and you need to check the book to make sure, like, if any of their allergies correspond to like what the most effective medicine is going to be, you have to figure out like an alternate dosage of something else that won't kill them, you know? But what makes it especially Papers, Please is, you know, whereas in Papers, Please, after you, you know, if you mess up, you get that little printout that's like, hey, violation, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And this, because it is Lovecraftian and because, you know, there needs to be kind of a horror aspect of this, there are anomalies that you need to spot. You know, some things like a big tentacle eye monster that appears in the windows, like this jittering fly man who sometimes appears, the paintings on the wall, maybe moving when they shouldn't, something like that. And if you spot any of those, you need to drink some laudanum in order to not take a sanity hit. And if you screw up, if you miss them, and they can be subtle, you're like a little like totem thing on your desk will like yell at you and say, oh, you should have noticed X, Y, or Z. And you take the sanity hit. And then like, if your sanity goes too low, like the, what the patients say when they come in is all jumbled up, you know,
it's, oh, no.
It's, you know, like the letters are out of order and stuff. And like particular medicines or diagnostic tools are, kind of off limits to you. Like chains appear around them.
Hmm.
No.
Is there a way to come back from that? Like, can you get the chains removed in any way?
So they change around between patients. And then like each new day when you start, no matter how low your sanity is, it's still fine until you miss an anomaly.
Okay.
The thing that, you know, thing about this that makes it very Papers, Please, but also works a little bit against like this branching narrative thing that they're attempting to do, is that this is incredibly difficult.
Hmm.
I kind of ended up in the ending that I had because like the path to that required me to treat fewer people, and thus I had to spend less money refilling my medications.
Wait a second. Did you immediately go the deny, delay, depose route?
You know, I don't know how legally actionable jokes are about that now.
It was more of a deny, delay, deep one.
Yes. Yep. That's more of what it was like. But it was like, okay, people who show this particular kind of symptom, you know, there's a guy who says like, hey, don't treat these people. And I was like, okay, well, that like the only way for me to go is to treat fewer people. And you know, just like get more money because people showing those symptoms are also more expensive to treat. It's because you have to start doing like mixtures and things like that. But yeah, like I just kind of found myself, and it was only a first playthrough. Like a playthrough of this takes about like 6 hours or so. It was like three nights that I streamed it. But like, I in the process of learning the system, I ended up with no money. And when you don't have any money, you can't buy the medicine to treat people, but also you can't afford either the lamp oil needed to light your practice and therefore like visually see their symptoms, and you also can't afford the laudanum that you need to deal with the sanity effects anomalies.
Damn.
Yeah.
So, did the I missed the actual ending. I had to get off from watching the stream. Did you feel like it kind of tie things together? Because when I signed off, it seemed like, I don't know, it seemed like a little bit some of the wheels were coming off of the game.
Yeah, it ended up tying things together after I kind of committed and stopped like just constantly guttering out with no sanity. you know, mm-hmm. like it did make it easier for me to get through the, through to the 30 days. And the ending that I got, it's not like it was unsatisfying. It's just not necessarily, sure. It wasn't a good ending for anybody. you know,
I mean, I feel like you would be disappointed somewhat if there was a good ending. Everything is fine. You fixed it.
Yeah.
In a Cthulhu game. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say like, oh, it did feel like by virtue of the fact that I had to stop treating people, I did kind of like fail in the remit of the game. But
sure. I mean, it sounds like you're a Lovecraftian character, so that it seems on brand.
Yes.
Also, like there was also a character that was just what the gravedigger is just straight up like, hey, kill these patients on purpose and I'll pay you. So there were definitely much worse options.
Yes. Sheesh. Yeah, there were there were options like that. There are like different characters you can like ally with, and if you decide to, or if you successfully help them. Like there are plenty of ways that it can branch. I think like the Steam page says like 30 endings or something like that. I feel like I got what I needed out of it in the one playthrough, but
yeah. So this isn't something that would lend itself to like an endless mode where it's like, okay, see how long you can keep going.
You know, I think there is an endless mode.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. But don't quote me on that. It's not 30 endings. It's 12 endings. Sorry.
See, it almost, and granted, this was just me watching it, felt like it would be might be better if they took out the economic aspect and I don't know, somehow made it so say like each round your what supplies you get are randomized or something like that, where it seemed like the actual puzzle solving was real compelling, but some of the economic stuff just became a drag.
It feels like they kind of threw the economic side into it to make it feel more like Papers, Please, when that is a game about driving you to desperation. So you, you compromise in performing your duties or doing the right thing, to your mind, right? Like that.
Like I got cosmic horrors to do that to me in this game. I don't need economic pressure.
But also, like, I don't know how that plays against the, needing to buy the laudanum in order to dispel. Like, I don't know how this game would work without like a poor get poorer kind of thing here. It's just that thematically, this is not, it's not necessarily a game about privation in the way that Papers, Please is.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's neat, like it's taken a while, but there have been a few like Papers, Please alikes, that have like popped up. There's another one called like That's Not My Neighbor that looks kind of cool. There's one that came out a few years ago called Mind Scanners, I think.
At least on my Steam page, Do No Harm is bundled with a game called Death and Taxes.
Yeah.
And I've never heard of this before, but it looks like it is a Papers, Please alike as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know you're the Grim Reaper working an office job in that one, I think. That's a game that I've seen flit around in recommendations, but I've not messed around with it, but that does look Papers, Please-y.
Yeah, I was looking at it because I thought it was by the same developer, mm-hmm. but no, it's just bundled together. There's no connection.
Yeah, I wonder if it's the same like publisher or something like that.
Yeah, it doesn't look. Yeah, there's. I mean, thematically, it seems like there's a pretty clear connection, but yeah. I don't know what other connections.
It
there
is
are.
The same publisher.
Aha! There we go.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's neat. It's not like a lot of things that I've played. We're not rolling deep in Papers, Please alikes. Had some problems with the tuning and with the ending that it drove me to. I think if I played through it again with the knowledge that I have now, I could definitely succeed more. I got a little bit self-conscious because like so much of the play as I was streaming, it was like spinning this little decoder wheel, trying to figure out like what the dosages were, because there is some trial and error in it, right? Like where, you have to say, look at the math of like, I give you a small dose of this medicine that I have a lot of to see what the effect is, so I can set the wheel and figure out what the right dosage is for you, kind of thing.
Mm. I do love the diagnostic animations in this where you just throw the medicine in their face.
Yeah. Yeah, there are little like vials of like test medicine that you can use to determine like, okay, like, is this, what category of medicine do you respond to positively or negatively? And also, do you require a high or a low dose in order to like narrow things down for yourself?
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's Do No Harm. I was happy to have checked it out.
It's nice to hear a good entry in the Cthulhu canon.
Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes hit or miss when it comes to mythos themed games. This generally successful. Who has something else? Because that's all that I had.
So I've got something new.
Yeah, go ahead, Moxie.
So likewise, I partook in the Steam sale. So first off, I picked up Void Crew. I didn't get a chance to play it, but we definitely need to get together and play it.
Yes.
One of
sick.
Us.
Mm-hmm. More relevantly, though, I picked up a game called Cruelty Squad.
Oh, yeah, because there's a new one coming out. Cruelty Squad and Psycho Pass R? Not Psycho Pass. I think that might be something else. Psycho Patrol R or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's this... So it's gameway-wise, it's a boomer shooter.
It's like a boomer shooter immersive sim kind of thing. Yeah.
Exactly. And but it's explicitly reminds me of what was the game that not Hypnospace Outlaw or whatever, but the one that was the shooter spinoff.
Slayers X Terminal Aftermath Vengeance of the Slayers.
Yes, that one. I can't remember why I didn't remember that.
Yeah, so easy.
I really, that is a very charming game, and mm-hmm. I adore Jay Tholen's work. So yeah.
So this is not anywhere near that fidelity, but has kind of a similar aesthetic where it's just purposely bad and abrasive, you know, graphics and sound and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Really? You know, everything is just weird, you know, neon colors and blaring, you know, chiptune music and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the plot line is that you are it takes place in a cyberpunk future, except where corporations control everything, and you are a corporate mercenary that is being hired by corporations to just straight up, you know, kill rival CEOs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
However, just to the nonsensical degree. So, you know, straight up, one of the big ways you make money is after you kill someone, if you give the bodies, you can pick up the organs and sell them on the stock market. And just weird things like one of the CEOs you have to take out, they're sending you after him because it's a VC venture capitalist firm that gave him money for a startup, but he just spent it to buy Funko Pops.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just find this dude in this giant like Mount Air Funko Pops. And it's one of these games, it is so bizarre and nonsensical that it's almost difficult to describe.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just very strange weapons, kind of almost intentionally bad AI,
mm-hmm.
in that it ostensibly it does have a certain degree of stealth mechanic. And has a certain degree of kind of Deus Ex thing where you're in somewhat open worlds, and you know, there's NPCs around, and you know, not everything is trying to kill you. However, at the same time, the enemy's AI is basically, as soon as it sees you, it will come after you and try to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means things where, like, if there's a, say you have to, you know, assassinate a CEO in their house in the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just straight up walking down the street and a guard sees you on the sidewalk through the window, they'll just start shooting at you. And it's one of those things where, on the one hand, it's, you know, ostensibly maybe just, you know, I don't know how experienced the person who developed it was this just cutting corners on AI? But it also, you know, supports the purposely lo-fi aesthetic and mm-hmm. kind of supports the idea that, you know, this is just this blatantly irresponsible, you know, corporate dystopia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like, a lot of it is just an exercise in surreality, both visually and in the writing and in the mechanics, is my understanding of it. People might, you know, sensible people can disagree on how much that's just an excuse for not making something polished. But right. I do think that the product that is out is the product that was intended to be, that was intended to be created, let's say. Mm.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
I adore the writing in this, mm-hmm. which this is not a game I played. We were going to do it for Watch Out for Fireballs, but there's no colorblind mode, and the interface, it relies a lot on red and green. It is mm-hmm. a game specifically made for Gary not to be able to play it. So yeah, that was a bummer. I was looking forward to, but like, I just some of this dialogue. I have thousands of followers. They say I'm black suppositoried and debased. I've been getting really into hell, in quotes, both as a mindset and as something to strive for in an organizational sense.
This feels like you're reading I Think You Should Leave.
Yeah. when the beat drops, I'm going to fucking kill myself. Like, just this, really extremely punchy, like almost like old weird Twitter kind of shit. Yep.
Apparently, I haven't seen it yet, but apparently there's a sequence where, like, you can talk to someone and upset them, and that causes their, you know, corporate mandated like mood monitoring to go too low, and they get fired. And that, since they are no longer a employee, that causes their like implants to just explode.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is just a deeply weird game. Unfortunately, like, from a gameplay standpoint, it is not exactly for me, although I do think that, you know, the aesthetics and stuff like that, you know, kind of makes up for it.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
Go on.
No, go ahead.
The only other... I also got back into Elite Dangerous a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Although that's mostly just been me wrestling with being a, you know, not a new player. I don't have all the tutorials. However, having not played for a number of years, I don't recall very much about the interface.
Oh, no.
Okay.
And so it's very much been kind of comedy of errors of me trying to, you know, get my way across the galaxy.
Okay.
I've been experimenting some, though, with they added a first-person shooter mode where you can, if areas are at war, you can go and, you know, become a mercenary and fight for one side or the other. Mm-hmm. So I'm tracking down areas where, you know, there's a communist government versus, you know, corporate government and fighting the good fight.
Okay.
It's
wait, which side
mostly
are you on?
Not that great. It's kind of the enemies are kind of bullet spongy, and they've got this weird mechanic where, you know, laser weapons are good at taking down shields but bad at taking down health, and then bullets are the reverse. However, it's to the point that it's just way too exaggerated, you know, like how little damage laser weapons do to health, to the point that it makes the game a lot less fun to play.
And shields recharge way too freaking fast.
Oh yeah, yes, very much so.
Yeah, that sucks. That's one of my least favorite things in a shooter is the bullet spongy. If they end up being bullet spongy.
The one thing I haven't seen, and I'm not sure what the motivation for actually doing this, but is an interesting idea, is all of the, you know, when you do a first-person shooter, you know, this mode, it's kind of like a Battlefield Light in that, you know, both teams have 1,000 points. Every time someone on a team dies, their team loses 5 points. And or you can capture control points to knock off 50 points. And, you know, first team to get to 0 points and then have everyone eliminated loses. And all of these take place like on a outpost on the surface of a planet. And one of the interesting things is they are literally taking place on the surface of this open world planet. So there is absolutely nothing stopping someone from just flying their ship into the middle of the match and start shooting people.
So anyway, I started blasting.
Exactly. Again, like, it's kind of weird because unlike something like Eve, I guess they have added some economy and, like, ability to control planets and stuff like that. But unlike Eve, as far as I can tell, it doesn't actually matter that much. It's more just something you do explicitly because you want to influence the game's, like, political simulation as opposed to actually getting money out of it or whatever. But, you know, I can kind of respect just saying, like, we're going to simulate as much as possible, even if, you know, just so it's there for people to play with if they decide they want to. Yeah, I think that's all I've got. I picked up El Paso Elsewhere on Jala's recommendation, but I haven't gotten a chance to play it yet. So hopefully I'll be talking about that last time, but or next time. Oh, one more thing, actually. I think I found the perfect anecdote about Fallen London to give an idea of what the game is all about.
Okay.
So I spent the weekend, every weekend, the rats in Fallen London open kind of like a farmer's market.
Okay, the rats
and do? It's only available to rats. So in order to even get in, you have to, you know, pay them a bribe for them to declare you a honorary rat for the weekend. But then once you're in, you can trade items for rat shillings. So I had, I've been helping, golems, who kind of flee their owners and infiltrate the, music scene of London. And so I've gotten a whole bunch of, copies of the ballads that they've written, and so I was able to sell those to the rats for a whole bunch of rat shillings and use that to get a very rare item that is a map of the False Stars, which those are basically, this entire game takes place effectively in this vast underground cavern that's big enough to contain both London and an entire underground sea and some, and I think hell.
What is the status of the sun in this sea?
The sun, as far, it is complicated.
Okay. I am led to believe. Yeah.
Yes.
Is meant in a romantic sense, I am sure.
Yeah. Yes. Well, actually, kind of, yes. Yeah, it's complicated, but they're in the ceiling of this cavern are what's called the false stars, which are basically lights that appear to be stars, form constellations, that sort of thing. And so what I bought was a map of these false stars, star chart. And the interesting thing, though, is that gives me a bonus in a stat that increases my ability to work with the parabola.
Okay.
Which the parabola is the basically what you're seeing. It's the area that exists on the other side of mirrors.
Okay.
Hmm. Yeah. A lot of people have a hard time finding the parabola.
Oh yeah. No, seriously, do you often, I mean, it's basically like the Dreamlands, which is interesting because I had a nightmare in game where I had a conversation with a cat that implied that the nightmares are related to the parabola.
Hmm.
But apparently also the stars are related to the parabola. So that implies maybe the stars are related to the nightmares. So the point I'm getting is that basically playing this game is the process of completing those boards you see in movies where it's the thumbtacks with strings tied between them.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. that's the entirety of what makes this game tick.
Yeah.
It sounds like a game that's crushing in on the weight of itself, but then you just keep going.
Yes. The only way out is through, pretty much.
The only way out is through and allying with rats.
Yes. That was taken as red. If you weren't already allying with rats, what are we doing here?
Well, I mean, sometimes you have to ally with guinea pigs against the rats.
Mm.
Ben, I appreciate that.
what did Ben say?
I appreciate the appreciation.
Say it again.
I said it was a rat pact.
Oh, yes.
Okay. There I see what you did there.
Yeah. Nice.
That's all I got.
Cool. Dennis, take us home.
Yeah, I'll do my best. I'm going to make you guys very happy because I came back to a game that I bounced off of in the past, and I think I've found my groove with it. I am... back into Hell Train. Or excuse me, Monster Train.
Monster Train? Okay.
Got it.
Yeah.
Monster Train. I'm playing Monster Train.
That's great.
I'm playing one or two.
One, yes.
I guess it's just the demo out for two right now. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know exactly what's made it click this time around.
Mm-hmm.
I've been playing almost exclusively with the Stygian forces as my main element.
That's
which
the
one of those
blue
that is, it's like people? Purple yeah spell focused.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And having a ton of fun with that and then kind of switching around with who I'm using as my support, but just the archetype of fire everything. Mm-hmm. Spell wise is very attractive to me.
Yeah.
and that is fun. I've been, kind of progressing now through, and I don't know what they call them, but in Slay the Spire, it's ascensions, where like every time you win, you can make the game a little more difficult on yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. And those, at least to me, felt like bigger jumps up in difficulty each time than I've seen in similar games, where it's like every time something was added, it felt like a very meaningful difference.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, being able to, break the game is always at the heart of this kind of, deck building / auto battling game. And so, my focus has been mostly on, getting, units out that have an incant powers, which like when you play a spell, it buffs them, and then just pumping them up to ridiculous sizes by firing off a ton of tiny spells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is fun.
Getting the Stygian forces to chain like that is mm-hmm. so fucking fun.
Yes. Yeah. and then there was an artifact that I found. It was something like every third spell you cast, you draw a card or something,
mm-hmm.
Which then when you make all your spells cost zero, gets really fun. I didn't quite go infinite where I could just play and play and play, but got close enough that it was a real power fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And that is nice. Is quite enjoyable. I have been playing it through xCloud, and thankfully it's the kind of game that accommodates that. Like there's no quick time events or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I am missing is, you know, every time you enter a new stage, it'll pop up and tell you what song is playing. And like different bosses have specific music for them. And I've been playing with the sound off because mostly I'm like playing in bed and stuff like that. And so I'm missing out on that aspect of it, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, I'm having a really good time with the game. So getting myself prepped for Monster Train 2.
Oh, I would say you're not missing like critical parts of the game by not hearing the boss music, but that could just be me.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
The music's fine, but I kind of look at it like the art. It's like, that's not what I'm here for. I'm here to break shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm here to watch numbers go up, specifically my numbers.
What are you guys' favorite factions?
God, I like the candle ones.
Yeah, that's my go-to.
Yeah.
I'm terrified of the candle ones because they like die and I feel like I constantly get hurt where I'm like, oh, you should have lived, but I didn't mm-hmm. plan on your whatever kindling. I like the fat ones that eat the little ones. I forget what their names are.
Is that the red, like kind of the traditional demon ones?
No, they're like black and gasoline.
Okay, I know what you mean. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I like the candle ones. It's I just like the thematically and also just the churn, just the way you're able to fill up the entire board with them mm-hmm. is great.
I respect it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm very much though still on that kind of unlock grind that we were talking about earlier in the episode where mm-hmm. you know, I'm seeing new cards every time I win where it's like, "Oh, well, okay. This unlocks something new in strategy wise or build wise that I just didn't have available to me before. And that can be nice, but also like once you feel like you've got your feet under you enough that it's like, you know what you're doing. You don't need to be tutorialized. I would like to have just like a give me everything button that I can hit.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I know in Slay the Spire, you can go into the save file and just set yourself to Ascension 20. And like, you know, if you don't want to go through unlocking each card individually, you can just be there, have everything. They are, doing a rework to jump games a little bit. They're doing a rework of Sneko in the Downfall mod for Slay the Spire, which is the one character that I did not enjoy. And
the randomized cost.
Exactly. It's just, random bullshit go.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're doing a rework and it was fantastic. Like I really like the changes they've made. However, I didn't want to play through 20 times. So I was playing on the difficulty that I was used to. So, just popping in that save file change and getting instant access to everything, was kind of nice. Yeah. So I'm wondering if Monster Train has something like that where it's like, I don't want to have to grind to have everything available to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the real fun of these games is in the using the toys versus the unlocking them. And you need an on-ramp, you need, there's, it's nice that there is a curve, but if I'm ready to break the curve, like, let me break the curve.
Yeah. Mm. It's quick, like the unlocking stuff. It didn't take me very long to get access to all the factions at the very least. Right.
Mm-hmm. No. And I think that's just like, you have to summon a certain number of units or whatever.
Yeah.
So that is very quick. I am curious though, cause it feels like, at least so far for the three that I've got, really there's like, I don't know, 10 different units per faction, something mm-hmm. like that. Like it is not a very wide set of creature cards or whatever you want to call them that you can collect.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, that makes the possibility space feel a little more limited.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, it's got the auto battler mechanic to it that, you know, keeps things interesting in a way that Slay the Spire or what have you does not have. So, mm-hmm. It's okay that like, it's not a super deep pool of characters. It just feels very weird coming from games where it's like, oh yeah, every character has to have like, you know, hundreds of cards, to their name. Whereas mm-hmm. this it's like, you know, 50.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it just an interesting difference in the type of game rather than a negative necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that is Monster Train. And that is the quote unquote new thing that I've been playing. Still running along with iRacing. I've decided on the series I want to race, and I don't have all the tracks for it. So Daddy's getting out his wallet again.
Uh-oh.
That seems a little yep. exploitative.
Come on, yeah, Dennis.
Told you so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah. I'm happy. I'm like, happy.
How much is a course for it? Like, I've got no concept.
Yeah. So a new course is $15.
Okay.
That's you know, that's not a small amount of money.
No, no.
Yeah. So then, if I think about it this way, though, you know, so for a season of racing to be able to do every race on the circuit, I think it was 8 tracks. And then if you buy more than 6 pieces of content at a time, there's a 15% discount that gets applied. So, mm-hmm. you know, they throw you a bone. And if I think about like, oh, if I was, you know, getting a pass to a real life race course or something, or even just like season tickets to some sporting event that I enjoyed,
mm-hmm.
It would easily be way more expensive than this.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm telling myself anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to do the math here because I like math. So yeah, if it's eight courses, that would be like 120 with 15% off of that. So like 108 or something, or 104, yep. I guess, at the end of it.
I think it was 108 exactly because of taxes.
Okay.
So yeah.
Okay.
Dude, you're good. You're good. But yeah,
like
so that's
a game and a half, AAA game and a half,
a AAA game and a half. And if I think about like what I'm spending on, this is me like defending my hobby yeah. spending. Do you ever, this is that good old fashioned Catholic guilt.
Where's the red line though, where we have to intervene? You should state that now. And then
I try to find the red line every time I race.
Oh, dear. Cool.
but I know some of the people listening are into iRacing as well because I've gotten to chat with them. Hello. I landed on the I'm gonna forget the name of it, the Spec Racer Ford series. So it is an open series where like you can change your setup, but also the race car that you're in is a pretty simple one. So like you don't have to mess with downforce and stuff. So you can only screw it up so bad as you change the settings,
mm-hmm.
which feels like the right place for me to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see.
Upon reflecting about it, it does feel like this is like a dad game, you know, or like this feels like a dad hobby.
I think the only more dad, like in the 90s, the dad thing would have been a flight sim. Exactly.
Oh, sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I think the only thing that would be more dad to get into would be like War Thunder.
Yeah.
Okay. I've eyed it. I don't like the implications here.
All right.
You can only get into War Thunder if you have classified information.
Yes.
That's true. To wrap it back around to our banter though, with the nephews over for the weekend, I let the older one like, you know, put on the VR goggles and drive around. And that was just so much fun to, mm-hmm. you know, I've done it with my kids. Now I'm doing it with my brother's kids,
mm-hmm.
to introduce them and be like, hey, this handles like a real ass car. So, let's mm-hmm. see how you do. And, he was adorable. He goes around the track just in first gear. And not revving the engine or anything, just like very respectfully, probably walking pace driving around this track.
He drives like he got too high.
Yeah, basically. And you know, there's the track he was on, Lime Rock, was you know, there's a long straightaway right at the start finish line, as is the case with many tracks. And he's, you know, he's halfway down that and just puts it along and, you know, like completely straight. And I'm like, so, you know, if you click that paddle over there, behind, yeah, you got your finger on it now, that'll kick you up into second gear. You know, go a little faster. And he goes, no, I'm good. And it was just like a very zen experience for him.
You know, it's just a privilege to be driving when you're that age, I think.
Yeah, it was like that in alone was enough excitement. He was not worried about going as fast as he could. I will be sharing that with my brother when he gets back from Costa Rica. Hey, look what I put your kid in the wheel of, yeah. Around the wheel of. But yeah, good times with iRacing.
Nice.
Oh, excuse me. And that's like, I've derped with Bellatro a little more. I think I've unlocked everything that doesn't seem like a pain in the ass to unlock.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I might kind of be done. Hmm. It's right as the internet algorithm has decided I want to see Bellatro stuff though.
Oh yeah.
And so it's kind of this weird thing about everyone
drawing it back in.
Yeah. All these like, oh, here's my super broken build, you know, doing the billion E to the Xth power score in one hit. Oh, this crazy combination. And it's like, I don't know. I just, yeah. Good for you. You probably had to work so hard to make that happen.
Might be like a finite amount of Bellatro love in this world, because I didn't talk about it, but I played this on an airplane over the weekend. And I was like, all right, I kind of like it again. Or like,
yeah.
I was ping ponging between that and Slay the Spire. And it was good at taking up time, I guess.
That love had to go somewhere.
Yeah, I find myself much more prone to like constantly restarting until I get the god start combo of jokers or whatever in Bellatro. Whereas with other games of its type, the challenge feels more on like, ooh, how can I make the hand I'm dealt work? And how do I, you know, this wasn't a great start, but maybe I can turn it around if I just find XYZ. Basically, it's like, hey, in the first two antes, if I don't have a clear win condition that's going to blow up, I'll just restart.
Yeah. So, I think Slay the Spire is like the best example where it's like 1,000 tiny choices that if you make them all correct, you kind of move in the right direction. And like a busted car is just like a cherry on top, but it doesn't make or break the run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then I'm trying to find a good like video example. I have one more note from Avowed, which I'm continuing to play.
Mm-hmm.
The first two companions, or at least the first two that I came across anyway, Kai, and then it's a dwarf. I think his name is like Marius or something like that. But it's two very different characters on paper. I think I mentioned Kai as like the Han Solo type, the, you know, flirty and gung ho Indiana Jones, whatever, Harrison Ford type, really. Mm-hmm. And then the dwarf is like this rugged survivalist, you know, more comfortable out under the stars than in the city, and kind of grumpy and hates everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's two very distinct characters that have, yeah, basically, although it's out under the stars versus under the ground. I'm not sure how to square that.
Right.
So two very distinct characters have different outlooks on the world, and somebody did not give their voice actors the note that they were doing the exact same voice.
Oh no. So it's like two of them talking as the same.
Yes. And it's, you know, it's different voice actors, but the exact same, like, I don't know, kind of, not gravelly, but I don't know the right way to describe it. I just need to find a clip to send you guys.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like, man, they're talking and it's like they're trying to like outdo each other in performing the same voice better.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they like their characters are different, they picked the exact same setting at the character creation menu in terms of the voice.
Yeah.
So, it continues to be just a goofy game. A lot of fun to play, moment to moment. It does a great job of rewarding you for kind of poking around and looking in corners.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're like, I wonder if something's over there. And then, hey, there is, you know, you do find something. And the movement, like parkouring around and jumping up on ledges and stuff, is good enough that generally, if you look somewhere and think like, I wonder if I can get up there, mm-hmm. that you can find a way. Yeah. And I really appreciate that. So it's just fun to explore. The melee combat is good, like I said. But I have started doing the kind of skipperoo through, dialogue stuff, which in a game that is, you know, this focused on story, is kind of a bad sign.
Yeah. That's a bummer.
Yeah.
And I think that completes it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Monster Train being the big new one, but, having fun with old stuff as well.
Cool.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, you can't beat a good open world game, which I mean, literally, like there's no way to beat it. You can just keep on finding fun stuff to do.
It's kind of the thing.
So I want to hear about those. It's a fun genre. And what are your favorite open world games, sandbox games, and moments from those games?
No. I'll get us started here with Dave, who says, I love the open-ended problem solving in Breath of the Wild and especially Tears of the Kingdom. I'll never build my own laser death ray mech, but I love that you can. Yeah. I dropped Tears of the Kingdom very fast for basically no reason. And
that means you can go back to it and play the whole game.
It does.
Without any problems.
It does. Yeah.
If you wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, Ben, what does our friend Doug at Nostalgia Arcanum say?
Our friend Doug at Nostalgia Arcanum says, I'm not big on sandbox games, but for any open world game set in a real place, I enjoy the tourist aspect. In particular, as a SoCal native, I had a lot of fun in GTA San Andreas 5 and Horizon Forbidden West. Visiting familiar Southwest locations, passing by old haunts digitally always feels neat.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That is fun, and that's why I wish that there was an open world game made about anywhere that I lived for a length of time.
GTA Mansfield.
Everybody, yeah. it's a world like you just drive through it in real time. Like it just takes like 15 minutes. let's see, Moxie, what does Shishi Shibumi say?
Shishi Shibumi says, Pal World, because where else can you use a flamethrower fox to scare off the law before going home to see how much ammo your weed monkey pal has crafted? I mean, to be technical, using flamethrower foxes to scare off the law, I think technically happens in the Bible.
Does it now?
Yep.
It's true.
Samson ties torches to fox tails and uses it to burn down a city he doesn't like.
Huh.
Old Testament gets weird sometimes.
Yeah. I never learned that particular detail. Yeah.
Power World, great stuff.
Dennis, what does Brain in a Bowl say?
They say Prey, the 2017 Arcane one. Goo your way up a wall to shoot a switch with your Nerf crossbow, of course, to open a hatch and mimic a coffee cup to roll through that hatch. All this to open a door, which you then discover could also have been opened by pressing the button next to it.
But
you don't get the style points.
Yeah, but like you're playing Prey, you got to do all that other stuff because there's basically no other game that lets you do those precise things. God, Prey is such a fucking good game.
Isn't there also, like, the risk that the door actually tries to kill you or something?
I don't know if mimics can become doors. They're more apt to become, like office supplies.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a door. Okay, to
pedant time, would you call Prey an open world game?
I mean, it's more of an immersive sim, but the fact that it is pretty much like, here is the station, have at it. And it's only kind of gated by like capability. It's like an immersive sim Metroidvania kind of thing, but like sandbox, I think definitely applies, right?
Open to interpretation world game.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not here to gerrymander anything out of this.
Is Arcane the people that made Deathloop?
Yes. Yeah.
Sweet.
A lot of the powers that you can get in Deathloop are, I mean, some of them are prey powers. Like Deathloop pulls from a bunch of their stuff.
Yeah.
Threnza comes in with basically my answer right now because that's all I can think about, saying Satisfactory definitely lives up to its namesake. It's very fun to sort of decide how organized and neat and efficient you want to be, or just leave everything a chaotic mess of conveyor belts and tubes. My finished setup was a chaotic sprawl of stuff that mostly worked well enough to get the job done. Like, the ceiling of how intricate you want to make things is absurdly high, and I respect people who know how to use the limited tools to make stuff all pretty, but, like, I don't know.
The floor for how gross you want to make it is absurdly low, though.
It is, yeah. I am a fan of efficacious and elegance.
Mm-hmm. Every time you build a sky... sky ladder on your stream, it kind of makes me smile.
Yeah, I love like, oh yeah, no, there's like no, like, physics don't apply. So like the second you unlock the ability to make a ladder, if you can't make one right away, you can get anywhere in the game. and you can delete, if you run out of iron rods, you can delete the ladder below you.
That's a problem we'll solve later.
Yep. God, Satisfactory is such a fucking good game. Yeah, no, this is this is mine. That map is a treasure. Exploring and kind of like prospecting and finding like the alien artifacts is super satisfying, and like getting into new biomes is great. Each of them having their own like little challenge to it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can tell like how well thought out the map is, where when their updates are like, well, we changed this one from a normal node to a slightly poor node, and we changed this one to like they're making like such fine detailed like changes like that throughout the map that they, you know, like have a good idea of what's going on there.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Callum say?
Callum says, recency bias, Cyberpunk 2077. There is a lot of cool stuff hidden throughout Night City to find.
My favorite thing about the Cyberpunk kind of map is that it is kind of the variety. You know, like, you know, it is not all just the city. The fact that it has the, like, the Badlands, like, the countryside around it, I think is really important to that working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that it's, like, connected to being, like, on the inside of a giant, like, city building or whatever. Like, and it's all continuous is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I've enjoyed as someone who hasn't played it is the fact that Mass Effect. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like, you know, in Mass Effect, there is like default Shepard that, you know, everyone knows this is, you know, kind of what Shepard looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't seem like there's that to the same degree in Cyberpunk, but there's also tons of Cyberpunk fan art. So I love the fact that there's all this fan art that, like, they have to explicitly say, oh, by the way, this is the main character of Cyberpunk.
Like, this, like, is the canon. I mean, like there are versions on the, like, on the box art that look like, you know, like, here is, like, a quote-unquote canonical V, right?
It's similar to, like, Shepard, I think, in Mass Effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or Derplander from Final Fantasy Online.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Moxie, what does Chris say?
Chris says, Valheim has got to be my pick. That feeling of accomplishment after building is something else. I played solo and with friends, and I love it both ways. Though exploration might be a little lacking.
You know, having never played Valheim, I, like, you know, people, you, like, you guys have talked about it to a certain degree, but, like, the amount of, like, build, I guess I don't have a grasp for, like, how much building is done in that.
It's like Satisfactory with rules that are enforced. So it's both a better and a worse thing. So because when you succeed in it, it's immensely satisfying because it's like, it's like you're building in Dark Souls or something. You have the rules are the bosses that you're going against. But Yeah, mm-hmm. it's satisfying in a different way for sure. But yeah, it's good.
Mm-hmm. There is a very high ceiling for how pretty you can make stuff.
Yeah.
See, I'm very much not that person. Like, I'm the one who the forest or whatever, you know, they've got this entire system set up for building bases to fend off the mutants. Instead, I just build a boat.
And finally here, Dennis, what does Josh say?
Josh says, just cause two. There's a JC3 and 4, but 2 blew my mind. I played the demo for 20 plus hours before my broke ass had enough money to play the entire game. I completed about 95% of the game. My favorite thing was tethering statues or water towers or other things to a vehicle and pulling them down. Oh yeah.
I think that's the one that's set in Indonesia, right?
I think they're all in Pacific Islands, but I don't. Yeah,
I forget if it's explicit or not, if they say what it is. But it's just dictator Asian country.
In one of them, at least the people speak Indonesian.
I can believe that. And this one, they speak. He's going around. But anyway, this was my answer as well, actually, because like the amount of depth that one mechanic has, and this was like one of the first games where random things would happen with your experimentation where you're like, oh, I need to get a clip of that. Or like, but it was like, it was so temporary where sometimes you couldn't, sometimes you couldn't, where it's like one of the only games like that, where it's like, oh man, but you wouldn't believe, like I hit this thing and it flew here and then blew that up. And then that blew it. I remember there's one, a door flew at me, but I grappled it just in time. And so then I, from the perspective of the door, was like spinning down the mountainside and like landed in the water. And it was just like, that's so cool. And it's like, it all works. Like, yeah. So that's my answer as well.
Nice. Yeah. So like Satisfactory is my answer, but I'll throw in another game that I can't stop talking about, Teardown. You know, it's not.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like not open world, but definitely sandbox applies to that. You know, and just the amount of just open-endedness, even before you get to just the wonderful, you know, plan and execution loop in that. Yeah, like mentioning Just Cause was like, oh yeah, no, there's another game where you can like attach rocket boosters to shit and connect it by bungee cords. And it's one of my favorite games of all time, Teardown. Yeah.
See, that was actually my... So I was trying to explain to my parents, because they don't get why like people would watch you stream or watch anyone stream games.
Okay.
And so that was the game I was actually explaining, like, oh yeah, no. So people watch Cole, and first he does the heist, but then the heist isn't fast enough. So then he optimizes the heist. But then eventually he gets tired of optimizing the heist. It's like, fuck it, I'm just knocking out these walls. And things go farther and farther downhill.
I mean, optimizing the heist does entail knocking down a bunch of walls, is the thing.
Well, true.
Yeah.
I mean, the name is Teardown. What'd you expect?
Yeah. So that's that's mine. Ben, Just Cause is yours.
Yeah, Just Cause too.
Moxie, how about you?
So mine is Kenshi.
Oh yeah.
One, it's special to me because like I first saw this game for sale like before Steam was a thing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like it's super super old. It's also a game, it's just got a lot, it kind of reminds me of the original EverQuest in that it's one of those games where there's a whole bunch of design decisions they made that objectively are not good design decisions, but the jank comes together to be awesome. You know, in particular, the game is very much a, like, you get better at a skill by doing it, and kind of encourages you to debatably, like, kind of cheese things. So, for example, like, it has a very explicit, you know, health system where, you know, when you... At the end of the battle, you know, because this is all like clubs and, you know, swords and stuff. You know, most people aren't dead. They're just lying on the ground bleeding out, and, you know, they'll die over the course of a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very much kind of encouraged that, like, hey, a really good idea would be you really need to up your first aid skill. Just go, like, follow around battlefields and just heal everyone. And then when they start crawling away, well, you know, you need to upgrade your melee skill. likewise, one of my favorite things on it is unarmed combat, you know, martial arts in it. You know, starts out, you actually do damage to yourself because you're when you hit, because you're injuring you know, your hands and stuff.
Yeah, you don't know how to make a fist. Yeah,
exactly. But the eventually it just goes out of control, where the fact that, like, if you're fairly high in martial arts skill, you'll literally be just decapitating crowds of people and stuff like that, just taking people out.
Yeah.
It's a heavenly sword kind of approach.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, that's a lot of fun. So Kenshi, if you can stomach the jank, highly recommend.
Okay. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, mine, I'm going to reach way, way back and say mine is Mercenaries 2.
Okay.
Yeah, this is like a PS2 era open world game. A lot of DNA in common with like a Far Cry or a Just Cause. But I remember just rampaging through a city in that game, and then turning around and looking back, and everything was just flat.
Yeah.
That was like an early, and that felt so freaking good.
That was an early game that had destructible terrain, I think. Mm-hmm. Was it a destructible terrain? I know you could
at least the buildings.
Yeah, the buildings. Like, and this was like pre like Red Faction Guerrilla, which was a game entirely about knocking down buildings with a hammer.
Yes. but yeah, just the power fantasy of having a Far Cry like game where literally you could lay waste to a city was really fun.
Nice.
That's a game that's a crime that it's never gotten a sequel, now that, you know, both game design and hardware has increased more.
Mm-hmm. If I recall correctly, it was kind of towards the twilight of Pandemic Studios, so that might be why.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. No, I just there's some of these games I haven't thought about in a very long time.
Good to visit.
No. Thank you, everybody, for responding. If you would like to participate in the multiplayer, follow us on Blue Sky at The Level Podcast. And watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. And Dennis, thank you for posting it.
Mm-hmm.
The End Boss.
Now it is time for The End Boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. I'll do mine first because it'll be short. This is me reporting on a rumor. So we're coming up on the announcements or the next Nintendo event, their direct, where they're going to show us more details about the Switch 2 possibly give us a release date. Right now, there is a report from a site called Insider Gaming saying that the Switch 2 is likely to be coming out in June with something that they are calling a multi-phase rollout. Where it will be first party games at the start, and then third party games will start coming in later on, which is just the way Nintendo releases.
Yeah, I was gonna say they're just formalizing something that already happened.
Yeah. So June is actually really quick in terms of like, well, let's get all the pre-orders in and drop this in. I'll be surprised if it happens like that. But like they're making this sound like it will be launching with more than just a Mario Kart. And so
I'm shocked to hear that people buy games for Nintendo that aren't made by Nintendo.
You know, sometimes like the Switch is, you know, before I got a Steam Deck, the Switch was like the way to play indie games. right?
I was going to say, I think Balatro and Slay the Spire are my two most played Switch games. So
yes. Yeah. So we'll see, like, that event is coming up. It's like, I don't know, after this episode, but God, it's really frustrating. I think we're going to be recording the next episode before, before that event. Let me look. Yeah, no. So it'll be like, yeah, no, I bet you, like, the biggest news, we're not going to be talking about it. All right. Well, see you guys.
We'll be talking about it just, you know, a week later.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So Switch 2, we'll learn more. I'm curious to see more.
You know what else is happening in June?
What else is happening in June, Ben?
Death Stranding 2 is coming out, and they released a 30-minute trailer for the game, which...
What?
Makes sense. I mean, it's like a play. They show stuff in the game, and they show, like, cinematics and stuff, so it's kind of like meandering, like, featurette of, like, what's going to be in the game.
You can't call that a trailer. That's like a spotlight more than anything. It's a demo.
They call it a gameplay trailer on YouTube. And that's... I like the idea of a 30-minute Kojima trailer. So.
Yeah.
But, like, in it, they reveal kind of, like, the new, like, biomes that you're in that look a lot more varied. There's, like, snow, desert, rainforests and stuff. There's a kind of ship home base element to it. And there's a bunch more cast members that are more well-regarded people in the film industry.
Mm-hmm.
Further blurring the lines of what this is.
Were any of these surprises, or is this all stuff we know?
No. It's cool to see the iteration on, like, the game design and stuff. But yeah, it's even more Death Stranding this time.
Are any of the actors involved surprises, I guess, is my question.
A few of them I had to look up, where they're more famous, like, international, like, directors and stuff that I hadn't been as familiar with. So there's, like, a few like that. What's the one guy who does voiceovers and everything? He's the guy who did Indiana Jones most recently.
Troy Baker. He played the one of the villains in the first one. But
he's gonna. I was it the same character then. He's playing like a Joker in this one.
Yeah, okay. Like that character died and then comes back. That was a detail that was brought up. Higgs is that character's name.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, if you like the first game, there's going to be more of that coming. I think it's released June 26th. So.
Okay. Is that coming? Is that PS5 at the start, or is that going to be multi-platform? Basically, what I want to know is, am I going to have to buy this on PS5, or can I get it for my, like, good computer?
I don't know. I can look it up, though, while we talk about our next story.
Okay. Let's see. Dennis, tell me about this space game. We're on Space Kick.
Yeah, so this is another space game in the vein of Void Crew, where you are playing not as a starship and not totally in first person shooter view. You're playing like you're on the starship, running around, manning guns, and then can jump out of the starship to accomplish objectives, board other starships, fight other people. The line I keep on seeing for this, it's called Wildgate, by the way. This for Void Crew and for the upcoming jump ship is Sea of Thieves in space.
Yeah.
It seems like Wildgate is that concept, with a, Overwatch spin on it. It seems like the maps are pretty big and there's a lot of people involved, but ultimately you're, in a bespoke match trying to complete objectives versus, an enemy team. Which is a really interesting idea versus being kind of a roguelite, FTL like or whatever else. Like, it's interesting to see this new emerging, I don't know, what do we call these, Sea of Thieves like space Sea of Thieves likes I don't know why there's a million. So
this
of these
is basically Void Crew with ganking.
Yeah, basically. And a whole lot more cartoonish personality, so go figure on that front. But I'm not opposed to it. I'll sign up for the playtest. Apparently there's a playtest coming out in April that you can try to get into. And like, I really like, and I think we even talked last episode, like it's kind of a specific fantasy to be the guy running around in the engine room mm-hmm. of a spaceship, mm-hmm. guy or gal. It, can mm. we just acknowledge guy is not really a gendered term anymore? I guess
there's discourse around this. I don't see it as an especially, unless it is said very directed and pointedly. Yeah.
So I'll take myself back in from the aside.
It's non-gendered if you're Canadian.
Excellent.
Yeah.
You know, there's kind of a very specific fantasy around that this is mm-hmm. scratching. I guess, I don't know. I feel just uneasy that it seems to be so prolific all of a sudden. Maybe mm-hmm. it's not all of a sudden. I just haven't been paying attention. Maybe it's blue car syndrome. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it gives me some pause.
Yeah.
Like it feels like the birth of the hero shooter. Right. Mm-hmm. And then everything everywhere was a hero shooter with a battle pass.
Yeah.
For a little bit.
It's not like Blizzard would ever, you know, make questionable live service games or, you know, treat its employees in a questionable manner.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be noted it is a former Blizzard president or something.
Oh, whatever. Okay. Yeah. So it's not actual Blizzard.
Yeah. No, but it is. Yeah. Blizzard Flotsam and Jetsam, helming it anyway. Mm-hmm. Again, nothing against it. I'm signing up for the test. It's kind of a cool idea. I am interested to try Jump Ship as well. And then I am obviously still having a ton of fun with Void Crew. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering how big this bubble is, how long until we hit saturation. And to me, three games feels like about it, but you never know.
I think only one of them can be really popular, I guess, but also it sounds like these are all very different things too. So
Wildgate specifically, yes, this is a very different take on it. Mm-hmm. Jump Ship and Void Crew feel very close to each other, but
yeah,
I'm sure someone somewhere has.
I mean, if only one of them can
be
popular, they're all going to lose out to Warframes.
Yeah,
fair.
Yeah, Moxie, I don't even know how to begin segueing to what you posted here. So
someone published a very in-depth article on how presenting the fact that in video games, high heel shoes are a problem because they change a character's height, which then changes how animations need to play out. So, you know, their example being say you have two characters kissing, if you know, sometimes the character might be wearing high heels and sometimes not, then you have to figure out how are you going to have the animation play out so that, you know, the people's lips sync, you know, line up.
Yeah. And just like, so the filmmaker in me is like, oh, well, we don't have to show their whole body while they're kissing. Like, you could just cheat the animation. You could just cheat the animation and frame it in such a way that you don't have to deal with that. Like, for that mm-hmm. shot, they would just be floating up like how they normally would be. Sorry, I'm sure that's accounted for in that.
Yeah. So, well, and then they go in extreme depth with videos of all the different ways it can be done with, different trade-offs. So things like, for example, you can simply shrink the character's overall height so that, or their effective height so that their overall height stays the same,
mm-hmm.
which works fine most of the time. But, you know, because the body isn't, you know, proportionate, can mess with things like, you know, say having them push buttons because their hand will be at a different height.
Mm-hmm.
They go on, one of the options is if you have like platform heels, you can simply have the character's feet actually still be flat on the ground. They're just cropping through the heel, mm-hmm. but you can't see because they're platform heels.
Right.
But there's some funny ones. So, for example, you know, a lot of games, well, some games will, you know, do bespoke animations, which works fine as long as you make sure you get all of the animations with a bespoke version.
Yeah.
So they give an example of GTA Online where there is bespoke animations for just walking around or standing, but not for playing golf. So your character will literally, you know, square up to the tee
into the ground.
Yeah, all of a sudden float down.
Mm-hmm.
also, one of the real most common things to do, and this is, for example, what Cyberpunk does, is simply shorten the calf. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, the lower portion of the leg.
Yeah, so you're like the effective height doesn't change. Yeah,
exactly. The only problem with that is that when you're wearing high heels, it's not just the overall height, the location of your ankle joint changes.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll then get animations where their character's, you know, foot will be like articulating, or their ankle will be articulating at their foot instead of their ankle.
Yeah. It seems like this is very specifically a problem in which there's a game where like you can switch between heels and flats.
Yep.
Right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, if you're making a game, and I see they have like the examples here, like Nier Automata or right. like Bayonetta, like specifically, right? Like Bayonetta, you know, like, and no matter what costume she's in, she's always going to have like those particular shoes, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, mm-hmm. we can just animate her because like, it's not just the height, like it's the gait too, right? Like,
yeah, and they mentioned that. Yep. Yeah.
Huh. This is complicated. Everything in games is complicated.
They also mention there are a surprisingly small number of games where men can wear heels. Mm-hmm. They mention the two mainstream ones they were able to find are Saints Row and Final Fantasy Online.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they also mentioned some, like, maybe it's a mobile game or something. But yeah, that's surprisingly uncommon, apparently.
Yeah. Normative designers.
Yep.
You know this is going to be an article that, like, a decade from now will be the most referenced thing for developers. Like,
mm-hmm.
people will find this and cry tears of joy because they're like, okay, someone figured it out. Thank God.
Yeah. No, this is...
Really, someone documented how people have figured it out.
This is really exhaustive.
Well, there's even a thing I know where it's apparently just like walk cycles are really difficult. I want to say, is it Cole, I'm sure you don't know, is it like the Simpsons or something famously avoid showing the character's feet when they're walking because that's actually really hard to animate?
I don't know like that specific thing, but like that is a, like that is, it's kind of just an animation trick all around, unless it is, unless it is a style that, unless it is a style that is so simple or so exaggerated that you can just work that into the design and you don't need to like realistically render the motion of like a human, like the mechanism of a human ankle,
right,
you know, like working, you know. So like that's not necessarily a problem in like old Fleischer cartoons because, you know, like everything was just all noodly, but the second you start getting into like, mm-hmm. you know, King of the Hill style, then it starts right. being, it's one of those things. Like I remember when I, you know, just like working in, you know, the digital marketing place, working with, you know, between clients and the designers, and like very quickly learning these things, but also like, how do I tell this client that we can't just have this car turn? Like, right. there is no, with your budget, just like, you might as well be, we can do so many things, but like, to ask me to like have this car turn in frame and not cut away to, you know, between these like things, you might as well be asking me to like give you, like bring you the moon.
Right.
Oh man. Yeah. It also makes me think of all the kid shows like Bubble Guppies or Dino Trucks and all that. Like, kids shows will find any reason to have the characters not actually walk.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. No, if you can just cut it off at the, you know, just like at a bus shot, and then just mm-hmm. like, oh, we don't need to animate anything but other than Ta-da. Them just bobbing up and down as they walk. Yeah. Oh man. Yeah.
God bless every single person that makes something in the digital realm. Holy cow.
So many things so many things you just don't even think about. Like, apparently, like, one of the big things was like, again, things you wouldn't expect to be like the most demanding things, but like one character in a 3D modeled video game handing something to somebody else is one of the most difficult things in the entire world to do. Just like, you can't like really like animate like somebody drinking something very well.
Yeah.
Apparently,
how do you make it look like things should be touching?
Yeah.
Apparently, one from my heard is like the guy who originally drew Spider-Man. I guess, you know, normally drawing hands is something artists really struggle with, but mm-hmm. that was like the thing he was really good at,
mm-hmm.
which is why Spider-Man does the whole like kind of the weird hand position when he's shooting the webs is basically the artist flexing.
Oh my god, I never thought about that. Like,
animators.
Yeah,
he doesn't need to do the thwip. He could hold his hand anyway.
He does now.
Oh yeah. I think there's a scene in the original Tobey Maguire Spider-Man about that.
So yeah, like in Spider, like the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man was different because it made him into a mutant, and just like, oh, he's got the web spinners are biological.
Spider-Man jizzing all over New York.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas like in pretty much every other one, like the thwip, you know, like pressing there was like in order to engage the web shooter, like as a mechanism.
Yep.
Yeah. We went into a lot of detail there.
Well, the writer of this article did too.
Yeah.
I'm holding back on some of this nerdy stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's stories, I think. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Button it, but you can't show someone actually grabbing the buttons.
No. You need to kind of like cut away so you can change the asset.
The credit.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 537. We really appreciate you taking the time. It's not late notice because we told you earlier, but just want to remind you, if you're in the upper Northwest or the upper Midwest, there we go. I will be, with Gary at the Midwest Gaming Classic in Milwaukee, April the 5th and 6th. We are doing a panel, on Saturday night at 7 PM on the bonus stage. And then afterwards we're going to be doing a meetup, at the Up Down Arcade Bar. Come and see us. If you're out there, come say hi. It's a good show to go to generally, but also, you know, we want to meet you and all of that. Otherwise, you know what to do to, help out this show. You can leave ratings or reviews. You can tell your friends. You can support the network on Patreon. All of it's good. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
Don't think so.
Okay. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games. And saying that reminded me, if you're listening to this and you pledged to Deck of Wonders, the Master of Dungeons, the late pledge manager GameFound should be up as you're listening to this. So, go lock in that order.
Nice.
I'm Moxie.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. I only have one written down. Deny, depose, deep one.
Yup.
Yep.
Pretty good.
So who else had that?
I did as well.
I okay. only didn't have it because I feel weird doing my own.
Okay. Yeah. Moxie, how about you? What else did you have?
That's actually all I had.
Okay. Dennis?
Oh, I got a ton. I've got meta segue, which is not something that we said, but there were a couple segues this time that were meta.
Okay.
There is Pentagon City. Papers, Please alikes. And then finally, this last one is probably the strongest contender, but Rat Packed.
Okay.
But I really like the Night of Pose Deep One.
Mm-hmm. Ben, what do you have?
This is the first time the majority of my ones are ones that I did not say, but things I just wrote down. And okay. So I had Marionette with 7 zeros because somebody said Marionette times a million. And I thought that was funny. I wrote down Mesmerfolk because somebody mentioned Wizard Merfolk, and I thought okay. that was fun. And then I wrote down deny delay deep one because I thought okay. the pose was the third one, but
I need okay. to yeah. deny. It was okay. Deny, defend, depose. Or delay, deny, defend. Yeah, delay, deny, defend. I forget how we said it in the episode, but deny.
I added as deny, delay, deep one.
Okay, delay. Yeah, deny, delay.
So I think that's what we said in the episode, but yeah. I don't think any of those variants are going to get in the way of people getting it.
Yeah, yeah. So the actual phrase, if we're taking it, is delay, deny. And then defend. So I've got it. I've rendered it as delay, deny, deep one. If that's yeah, that I think works. That's too good not to use.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sweet.
Cool. It is decided.